Well, good evening, everyone. My name is Warren Lance, and I want to welcome you to the weekly Take Action Team podcast, where each week, not only do we want to inspire you into taking action, but we really want to give you some tools and knowledge to move your business forwards. And with that, we have an incredible individual. This gentleman has been studying nutrition for over 40 years. He's been working with elite athletes from around the world. He's worked with the Australian Olympic team, the U.S. Olympic team. He's known in the world of just enhancing like peak performance. He seems to be able to somehow figure out to get that little bit of extra out of the athlete. But then on the flip side, he's also incredibly passionate about the aging process and how to age gracefully. So with that, it is my absolute privilege to welcome to the line one of Isagenix's Scientific Advisory Board members, none other than Dr. Michael Colgan. How are you doing this evening, Doctor?
Excellent, Warren. Excellent.
It's hard to believe that you've been working with elite athletes for over 40 years. And I know some of them are world champions. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful to be still doing it. I think it's an honor and a privilege, and perhaps over that time I've learned a little bit.
Oh, I'm sure you have. Now, talking about learning a little bit, I know you've studied or you've with the University of Wellington in Auckland. I know you've worked with the Rockefeller University in New York, and again, how did you get this passion for, I guess, nutritional science and performance and aging? Like, how did that all come about?
Well, the nutritional science started in the Auckland University when I worked with the track and field team and fed them vitamins and minerals and proteins, because nobody ate at that time, way back in the 70s. People didn't even understand there was any connection between diet and performance. And we got some very amazing results. And then I got invited to Australia, to the Australian Institute of Sport, which is their Olympic training center, and did it again. And then I got invited to the U.S. Olympic center and worked there. And we did it again in 1984. At the games, and then I realized that it was, you know, you can do brilliant things with people's performance, and it's actually, when you look at the capacity of the human organism, it's not that surprising. It's just that we don't put it all together, and I think now, even now, right now, I've had one world champion, Shane Perkins, break the world record again, and it's because we're digging into what is really infinite. I think the capacity of human beings is infinite, and that's why I'm so passionate about it. Because, you know, when you think about it, human thought alone created all our science, all our art, all our literature, all our technology, all our performance, all our athletics, everything in our culture, from a planet that was just sticks and rocks. So when you realize the amazing power of thought, it's easy to get passionate about life.
Oh, no doubt. And I mean, so many of our leaders out there, when you talk about the power of thought, from Wayne Dyer to John Assaraf to Jack Canfield, a lot of these forward-thinking individuals, there's so much for thought. And it's interesting you mentioned Shane Perkins just broke another world record. In his sport, guys, he is considered over the hill, isn't he? Like, he's a professional
fighter.
And I remember talking to you and him down in Australia, and I think, how old is Shane now?
He's 29.
29.
I think he's coming up to 30.
30.
Yeah.
Typically, cyclers, like racing cyclists, are usually done their career at what age?
25. Sprint athletes are considered done at 25. If they haven't made it by 25, they're done. And there are a few exceptions, like Usain Bolt is an exception. But by the time they're in their mid-20s, most sprinters, for example, have given up. I work with Donovan Bailey.
And yet, Dr. Colgan, here you've taken Shane through amazing nutrition. I mean, you have him dialed in to the nth degree, and at 29 going on 30, he's breaking a world record. He's 5 years beyond his prime. And the interesting thing, chatting with you and him, I mean, what an incredible experience. I mean, Shane's career very well will go on for another 5 to 6 to 7 years, barring any unforeseen injuries. I mean, that's how dialed in you have his training, his nutritional intake to just extend that performance. And I know something that you're really passionate about is the concept of intermittent fasting. And it seems to be a buzzword out there. And like, I mean, you hear it in gyms, you hear it in CrossFit boxes. Yeah. Everyone's talking about intermittent fasting. Can you, let's take a huge step back and imagine you got a bunch of school graders, elementary school graders, and you're explaining intermittent fasting to us. What's the real broad concept behind that?
The real broad concept is that we evolved in a very spare environment. There was never enough food. So we are designed to eat intermittently. That is our design. But because we have overproduced food and we overeat food and we consider, you know, you've got to get 3 square meals a day, people have changed, and that's why 70% of North Americans are overweight. And so with the overweight, what people don't realize, what comes with overweight, even 20 pounds of overweight, comes inflammation of your arteries. You can't avoid it. And because we're not designed to carry that much excess. We were designed only to actually carry fat in times of famine. And we didn't have much chance to build it up. Now, in the studies of Paleolithic man, there has never been one fat person found. Now, of course, the number of people, you know, whose remains have been found is fairly small, like a few hundred, but they've never found a fat one. There weren't any. And that's the way we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be lean.
Got it. Which makes sense. And you're saying that the concept of intermittent fasting all of a sudden, as society has evolved, I mean, we're eating our 3 meals a day. A lot of times after work, you're going out for drinks. You're having dinner not at like 5 or 6, but you're eating at 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Oh yes, that's a whole other thing. That's really the timing of our food has gone skewed. We run to a circadian rhythm. We run to the 24 diurnal cycle of the light. And there are certain, and it runs all our physiology. People think it's just to do with sleep, but the circadian rhythm is not. It runs everything in our physiology. When your hormones are rising, when without going into it in great detail, approximately 20% of our genome is devoted to it. Every single day, 20% of our whole genome is timing us with the circadian rhythm.
The circadian rhythm.
Yes. And so that includes times we should be eating and times we should not.
Okay, so with the circadian, like times when we should be eating and we shouldn't be eating, now this also ties back to intermittent fasting, does it not?
Right, yes. I've used intermittent fasting with athletes now for more than 20 years.
Okay, so can you explain, so what is, and I believe it's my understanding that isogenics, before it was even a buzzword, for the last 14 years, we've been incorporating intermittent fasting into
It has. The isogenic system for fat loss, of course, is based on intermittent fasting. That's how it works. But the system, of course, because people want to lose weight very fast, the system is quite difficult. I mean, it's difficult to follow. And you've only got to look at a room full of isogenics distributors, and you'll see that a large number of them have not been successful in losing body fat. And the reason for that is that the system, they initially lose it, but then the system is difficult, so they don't stay on it. And then the fat creeps back on again, of course, because you've got to wait for a whole turnover of cells, which is, for your muscles, 200 days, for your whole body, about 400 days. So that means that any system you start, you've got to continue it for 400 days if you're going to make a permanent change.
Wow.
So that's pretty hard when you consider the 30-day, which is very effective in dropping body fat, but it's got 4 days of pretty much 24 hours with no food.
And that would count as intermittent fasting.
That is a form of intermittent fasting, yes.
But the form that
I use with athletes is quite different.
Okay, so just talking about the typical North American, just so we get it, why is it important? Because I've heard David Jilks, I've heard you in the past, where like David a lot of times recommends people trying to get all their calories in a 12-hour period. So if you wake
right.
up in the morning, you want to be done consuming all food, and unfortunately that includes wine, by 8 at night. And
yeah.
you know, so before we get into like why that, but like why? Like, why not having any food in your system, like actually doing that intermittent fasting, why is that helping us age more gracefully? Like, how does that extend or help life?
Well, we are designed to be empty in the gut most of the time. Now, that's hard for people to accept, but that's our genetic design. And really, that's what David's talking about. That's what I use with athletes. That is a key. That's a linchpin of performance and also of being lean. And now, of course, there's massive number of studies have come out in the last couple of years. I'm just looking at one in the moment, which is the role of therapeutic fasting in women's health. And it's a whole big review of many, many studies. And it's... Well, I can quote you from the conclusion of the study, which is they included all the studies on intermittent fasting, which addressed women's health, and it was shown intermittent fasting was shown to improve both reproductive and mental health. It ameliorates cancer, muscular skeletal disorders, and
It's powerful.
It has such a wide-ranging effect because what we're doing is eating in accord with our genetic design.
Got it. Okay, so that makes sense. So the whole idea of this, we weren't designed to have food in our gut 24 hours a day.
No.
We can take advantage of a 12-hour window where we don't put anything in. I guess would it be safe to say it allows your body to sort of regenerate and more like do what it was designed to do?
It's absolutely, I think for good health, it's absolutely essential. And the way that I do it with athletes is fairly simple. They have their evening meal about 7 p.m. They don't eat anything after 8. They go to bed and get up at maybe 7 or something in the morning. Then they go work out, but they don't eat anything at all until 10 a.m. So that for 14 hours... they've got nothing going into the system.
Well,
and so that,
even before they train, like, so if they were going out, because a lot of times I've seen where if people are training, because you know I've ran some marathons, I've talked to different people, they'll get up, yeah. they'll maybe have some sort of shake, they'll have a banana, they'll get something in their body, and then they'll go out and train. You're suggesting train on an empty stomach.
Yes. Now, this is for someone who has been training on their gut, which is what we call it. That is, they put food in their gut, and then the body uses the food in the gut for the training. Then their body gets used to that, and over a period, if they don't have it, they would feel terrible. But they will have superior training and a superior effect by gradually shifting to not having anything and doing everything on an empty stomach. I learned this many, many years ago from Arthur Lydiard, who was the best Olympic coach ever.
Okay, so that's for athletes. How about, let's have a conversation around like timing and your nutritional intake.
Right, well your system...
What would a person do? Like the normal person, North American, what would you recommend?
Right. Well, the system that we have, and remember, you can't thwart the system. You cannot thwart your circadian rhythm. If you think you can, just try going 7 days without sleep.
You can't.
That's it. So, but it controls every hormone in your body. All the hormones that control your food intake, the ones that give you the cravings, the ones that give you satiety, the ones that put on weight, the ones that take off weight, they all have a circadian rhythm. And they're only meant to be fed between around about 10 o'clock in the morning and 8 o'clock at night. So it's a 10-hour window that we're designed to eat. And that's for everybody. It's not just for athletes. That's for everybody. So I always advise, and in fact, I'm just writing a new little book now called The Little Book of Fat Loss Secrets, in which I advise people, because we more and more go out to dinner at 9, 10 at night, to eat first or have a protein shake first and then have a light supper. Don't load your system up when it's going to spend its time in bed recovering.
Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense. And yet, the way society, because of our lifestyle, and I'm guilty as charged. I mean, there's many times where I've been out with groups of people and we're eating at 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and it isn't a light meal. It's a heavier meal. And you're saying
right.
That's
yes.
Occasionally it's okay, but it's completely contrary to having a really healthy life.
Right. If you want a healthy life and you want an extended life, and I think that these days with what we've got, you can think of 100 years at least. If you want an extended healthy life, then you have to obey the system.
Okay, so hang on a second. Your belief, and I know this is just you, you're thinking with the tools that we have on hand right now, and if we sort of follow, I guess it's a follow our circadian rhythm the way we are designed, that we could have a healthy, thriving life, good quality of life right up to 100 years.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I fully intend to do that myself.
Well, you're well underway, my friend, because... I mean, your fitness level at age, I think you're like 75, 76. I mean, your fitness level is that of a lot of 20-year-olds. I mean, a lot of 20-year-olds can't keep up with you. So case in point, and no different with David Jilks, and there's many other people out there that at their 50, in the 50s, they're in amazing shape. So it's
yes, good. There are.
Okay, so that being said... then let's talk about it. Like if we have the tools at hand and we're I'm saying, okay, Dr. Colgan, I would love to live to 100 years. How would
right.
you sort of say it should look for me or for the average person, the typical North American, the typical Australian? I mean, what would you suggest? Hey, I want to live to 100 years. What are some of the things that I should be doing, like to incorporate, obviously, the intermittent fasting, but like the timing and the meals? How does that all fit into the equation?
Right. Okay. Well, first, your circadian rhythm starts to become disrupted in our society at about age 35. Now, we don't know, because we don't know about societies before us, we don't know whether the circadian rhythm became disrupted in generations before, because we can't measure them. But we know it happens now. By the time you're 35, your circadian rhythm is disrupted. And one thing that you can do to prevent that and even correct it is to use the isogenic sleep spray at night. Now, whether you sleep well or not doesn't matter. It's the amount of melatonin that you have available to run the whole system, not only at night, but during the day as well. And that's a start. And the second thing then is to think about putting your meals between 10 a.m. in the morning and 8 at night. And just outside of that, have maybe a snack, a little nibble or something. Maybe socially, you know, have a glass of wine. But just confine your eating to those times. And then the next thing is that there is a huge lot of evidence that during those times, you should space out 4 or 5 meals. Athletes I work with use 5 meals. Evenly during that between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. And that's the way we're designed. We're designed actually to eat little and often.
Little and often. Okay, so for me, if you were to lay out my meals, what would you suggest my average day or Arlene's average day should look like? Like, how would you lay it out for us? Because you know we take the isoline shake, so
right.
We all eat real food. Because everyone, that's one of the biggest things that come up. So many times people go, well, do I get to eat real food or do I have to drink shakes for the rest of my life? And I always say, you know what, you're still eating food. Don't worry about it. You're still taking in real food. And they go, oh, thank you. So what would a typical day look for, say, Arlene and I, as far as spacing out meals?
Well, you should look at the time necessary for a meal to digest. And it's between 2 and 3 hours. And if you put in another meal during that time, which people frequently do, then you don't get the benefit of the digestion. And you put a load on the gut, you put a load on the liver, you put a load on the kidneys. And our lifestyle, most people, you can look this up in the National Library of Medicine, but the incidence of chronic kidney disease has skyrocketed in the U.S. Don't know about Canada, but skyrocketed in the U.S. because people are eating food on top of food on top of food.
Okay. So you need to let your meals, like if I start my day with a shake at 10 a.m., then I shouldn't really have anything else again till 12.
Yeah, 12 to 1, yes, that's it. And then, you know, about 3:30 and 5:30 and maybe 8 o'clock or 7:30. But that's how we try to do it with athletes. It works the very best. I mean, the results speak for themselves. I mean, I did this with Leroy Burrell when he broke the world 100-meter record. I did it with Donovan Bailey when he broke the 100-meter record and won the Olympic gold. I've done it with Shane Perkins. I've done it with a whole lot of people. It works tremendously. But it works for the average person, too. It's just getting us back to the way we are designed to work.
So your thoughts now... Let's think about the typical North American, because I am not an elite athlete. I do the occasional marathon. I am fairly fit, but I'm certainly not an athlete, like an elite athlete by any means. So for someone like me, I mean, I understand that it makes a lot of sense to have 4 to 5 meals a day.
Yes.
Obviously, a lot of people are conditioned to eat breakfast, lunch, dinner. Makes sense.
Yes.
And then you're saying add 2 shakes into my day to round out my 5 meals. Like,
I think that works really well, and that's what we try to do, like 2 of the meals are shakes. And if you, you know, say, well, that's pretty bland, that's not enough for me, oh, add a few nuts to it. Add a few, maybe a couple of dried figs or something like that. That's what we do. Or a piece of fruit. And it works very well. It works very well. I would never operate any other way myself.
Okay. Now, does it not also, by feeding or fueling your body every sort of smaller meals, every 2 to 3 hours, does that also have effect of like revving up your metabolism? I've heard the analogy that, hey, Warren, you know, like here's your digestive system or your metabolism, and here you're feeding it just like little twigs, but if you want to build a roaring fire and really have it firing, you have to continue feeding it. And I guess that's the concept of every 2 to 3 hours will actually speed up our metabolism and help us lose
yes.
weight.
Yes, I think if you look at it as a fire or a furnace, then you can fill the furnace, and then you have to wait till it burns down before you can put more fuel in it. If you try to stuff fuel in, it's not going to work real well.
Right.
And that's what a lot of people do. Basically, in terms of the real food that we eat and that I advise athletes to eat, it's the Mediterranean diet, a sort of mixture of the Paleolithic and Mediterranean diet. But anybody can get the actual 10 points of it from us, from me. And I think they're on my Facebook sites as well, but it's pretty simple.
So you have a 10-point sort of meal-type program for individuals to follow?
Yeah, it's...
Interesting. Okay. Well, that's cool. I mean, I would love to share that. I mean, that's exciting. Now, what about someone that's wanting to lose weight? I mean, typically, we're trying to cut back, like... two shakes and one healthy meal. Now, granted that they tend to make that a real big meal, you're saying actually split that meal maybe into two, like take the food that you were going to consume, do your two shakes, and then take your one meal and literally divide that into two. Because is it not true? I mean, you go to a lot of the restaurants in America, and the portions we're getting are huge. I mean, they're serving meals to us on a giant platter.
Well, here's the way that it works. Your insulin system is a storage system. If you spike your insulin, it will store everything. If you have a very large meal, eventually you'll digest it, but your insulin will be wee high, and you'll be storing it all in the fat cells. So people who like restrict themselves to say, you know, one big meal a day and think they're going to lose weight are fooling themselves, absolutely fooling themselves. In fact, I'll give you a good example that somebody you know and is on my Facebook site. That's my daughter. My daughter absolutely refused to have anything to do with the sort of things I did with athletes. And she used to keep herself not really slim, but, you know, sort of from getting pudgy by starving and feasting. Big meal, starve the rest of the day, and that sort of thing. And it didn't work. And when she finally came around and said, okay, Dad, you know how to do it. Tell me how to do it. I told her how to do it. And she said, but I'll be eating three times as much. And I said, yes. Because you've got to keep your insulin even. If every time you spike it, it's going to store body fat. You can't help it. But if you keep it even all day, you won't store body fat. In fact, you lose body fat. And one of the things that I've got up now I've got another paper here from Cell Metabolism 2016, just published in June. Which is another meta-analysis of studies showing that if you can do a 12-hour fast each day, there's multiple benefits for health, including weight loss.
Wow.
So
incredible. Incredible that we've actually been doing this now.
Yes, and Isagenix, that's one of the reasons I'm so keen on the company, is that they provide a unique toolbox to incorporate intermittent fasting into your life.
They certainly do. That's exciting. That's really exciting. Now, you mentioned something else. I'd love to drop back, like jump back, because you had the 3 points to sort of like support your circadian rhythm, right?
Right.
And one was melatonin, and you said,
yes,
our sleep spray is a great product. You said,
right,
meals in between 10 and 8 a.m. You also said spacing the meals out, like every 2 to 3
evenly.
Hours.
Evenly, right.
Evenly. And then obviously exercise would come into that. Like we want to be incorporating some exercise, do we?
Well, I don't think you can get by without exercise. I mean, the only way muscle grows, I know people don't like to believe this, but the only way, the sole and only way muscle grows is by exercise. You cannot eat anything that will grow muscle unless you exercise.
Okay. So now, what kind of exercise, again, let's think about the North American population. I mean, a lot of the people are not going to go to a gym and work out 5 days a week, pumping iron or doing an aerobic class 5 days a week for an hour at a time. Like, I mean, what is, because unfortunately, I mean, I know there's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast and going, okay, so if I am to commit, what's the bare minimum that you would say, okay, Warren,
right,
and Arlene, if you guys really want to impact your health, which I'm passionate about, obviously the question is, what's the bare minimum? I can do more. I can throw in extra workouts, but what is the bare minimum per week that somebody should be at least considering to do?
Well, I've given this program to probably hundreds of Isagenix associates now. It's pretty simple. You start off really light. The major problem with most people when they suddenly commit to doing exercise is they do far more than their body's ready for. So I tell people, you get out of bed in the morning, you do one push-up, you do one crunch, and I'm talking one repetition, one crunch, and you do one squat. That's it for the day. That's it. And then for your aerobic exercise, you walk. You don't have to run. In fact, if you run, as soon as you start to puff, it becomes less effective. So that's it. Walking and something that takes you, in the beginning, less than a minute, less than 1 minute. But it is resistance exercise, which you have to do in order to maintain your muscle.
So one push-up, one sit-up, one squat, and then go
right,
for a walk.
That's it.
How long should the walk be? 20 minutes, half an hour?
Do you know, when you're walking around the house and you're doing housework, you're walking. When you're going to catch a bus or you're walking around the office, you're walking. It isn't a big thing. You don't have to say, okay, now I've got to get my boots on and I've got to go up the hill. You don't have to do that. You don't have to do any of that stuff. You can do very, very light. And the only time you start to increase it is when your body says, boy, do I feel good. And it's the same way with that little teeny bit of exercise, resistance exercise you do in the morning.
And then you're going to build on it, like from one push-up, you do a week
right,
of that, and then you can build up to 2 push-ups. And
yes.
In no time, you're doing 10 push-ups, 10 sit-ups, and 10 squats before
right,
you hop in the shower.
Right. I took a whole junior soccer team, and they, of course, loved to, you know, the push-up guy. Their best guy could do 70-something push-ups. And I told the coach, I can get everybody on this team doing 100 push-ups, if you like. And he said, okay, this is your program, guys. You're going to do this. And I went back 6 months later, and every single person on that team could do 100 push-ups. Merely by saying, okay, today I'm going to do 5 because I know I can do that. And then the day after, all right, I'm going to do six, but I'm not going to do six if I can't do it tomorrow. I'm only going to do six if it works. And so you do six. And then maybe a couple of days later, you say, well, I think maybe I can do seven now. And that's the way the body actually builds. And it is extraordinary, the capacity of the human organism. I'm always blown away by it. I've been looking at this now for 55 years of work, and I'm still blown away about
it. And it's also building the habit, like to jump it up and all of a sudden say, okay, Warren, you need to do 50 push-ups, I'm capable of, before you hop
right.
in the shower, and
yes.
all of a sudden I'm feeling rushed and then I don't do them. But if you say, okay, Warren, just do quickly 10 push-ups every morning before you hop in the shower, that's
yes.
something that anybody can do, or almost anybody can do, and it takes like not even a minute. So now all of a sudden
right.
I do that for a month, and I'm adding to it. All of a sudden it becomes who I am. It's no different than brushing my teeth. I never miss brushing my teeth in the morning.
Right, right.
Through this process, what would happen 6 months from now, I would never miss doing my push-ups, my sit-ups, my squats, because it's who I am.
It's once it becomes a habit, it's great. It's great.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
And that's where everyone can start. One push-up, one sit-up, one squat. And
yeah.
and just so that if some of you, everyone I think knows what a push-up and a squat and a sit-up
yeah.
is, but what a squat is for some of you that may not understand is basically you're standing upright and then you're just lowering your butt to the floor by bending your legs, right? You're just going down
right.
nice
that's
and deep
it.
And then you come back up. That's a squat.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is cool. I like it. Okay, so I don't know where the time's going. Like, I mean, it seems like we've just barely scratched the surface. I know I'm going to get you back on this call, but again, you mentioned melatonin, and because
yes.
I know that's in the sleep spray, and you said that really helps to maintain the circadian rhythm. Can you
yes.
can you speak, because it seems like the circadian rhythm is how we're biologically programmed. It ties into the why we want to do intermittent fasting and all the health benefits from it. And now you're saying melatonin will help to support our circadian rhythm.
Right.
What exactly, like, how is that happening?
Well, when we get to about age 35, after basic reproduction, which used to occur not so long ago, used to occur before 25 years of age. And we are programmed for that. After that happens, the melatonin starts to drop like a stone. You know, melatonin is what causes puberty and the reproductive system to develop and all sorts of things. But it starts to drop rapidly because we've fulfilled our function as an individual organism. And for, I don't know exactly why, except it may be to do with happiness, humans have decided they want to live as long as possible. And so when you do that, then you've got a pre-programmed system which is already declining by the time you're 35. The sensible thing is to find out which bits are declining that you can do something about. And we found quite a few. And one of them is melatonin. We can restore melatonin so that its rhythm and all the physiological functions that it controls throughout the day are in synchrony. And that's a huge thing. You know, it's massive. I was, you know, it was discovered in Harvard by Lerner in 1974, melatonin, and it was so effective and it's so big that I was part of a team in the U.S. who went to Congress and said, this has got to be made public. This has got to be, the public's got to be allowed to have it. And they said yes, and then the Canadian government hired me as a consultant to see if they would do it in Canada, and they did. And Canada and the United States are the only countries in the world that I know of there where melatonin is not a prescription drug.
Wow.
Everywhere else, you can't get it. Except by prescription. But it's so effective, it was so important that we we managed to get it through, and it, and of course it's sold now everywhere in the U.S. and Canada.
Wow. So you're saying by us getting melatonin, especially once we're like getting close to 35 years of age and our the melatonin levels and everything are starting to decline,
right,
or our circadian rhythm, like things are starting to go off kilter, you're saying by getting melatonin supplementation into our body, we can have a profound impact like on all our physiological functions.
It's an amazing impact. It's been so well measured now. There are massive, massive numbers of studies on it.
Wow. So again, and the melatonin, you have melatonin in our sleep spray. Would you be, Dr. Colgan, would you be willing to come on? Because I imagine we could have a complete podcast just on the sleep spray, how best times to use it. I know you
right.
mentioned 3 squirts. Even if I sleep tremendously well, it's not about that. Yes, it helps sleep, but if I want to really restore my body and different things after age 35, having 3 squirts of melatonin every day is almost a must.
Right. And the reason that, of course, it was sold for sleep is it does have an effect. But the reason that we even called it the sleep spray is because people recognize melatonin for its effects on sleep. They don't recognize that it has massive effects throughout the whole 24 hours.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that is a call I look forward to. Dr. Colgan, I want to thank you for your time. I mean, I feel like we just barely scratched the surface on intermittent fasting, but it is clear that there are so many benefits to it, and I think what's so incredible is Isagenics has been doing that for the past 14 years. I mean, we've truly been leading the way, quietly leading the way, and now all of a sudden it's becoming mainstream. I imagine you and John Anderson and the rest of the scientific advisory board are going, hello, guys. I mean, we've been doing this for 14 years. Like, yes, we know it's good for you.
Yes, but 14 years ago, you couldn't say it.
Right. Right. I guess that's always the catch-22. There's so much that you and John know, but you're really not allowed to share, which is truly unfortunate.
Yes. I mean, there isn't a public awareness. So, you know, it's, gosh, it's what we've got available now from Isagenics is so amazing, I think. And, you know, life is far too short to settle for less than that, less than a toolbox like the one from Isagenics. And if you don't fully appreciate it and use it, you're missing so much.
Well, Dr. Colgan, would you be willing to come back and do a call on the sleep spray?
Oh, sure, yes.
Okay, well, then we'll get that set up offline, but I just want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. I know you're in the midst of having another book published. You're finishing up another book. Do you want to tease us with the title of the book that you
have? Oh, it's the Little Book of Fat Loss Secrets.
Oh, tell me who doesn't want that. But it has been an absolute treat. I just really want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And for any of you that want a team member to hear this podcast, there's 3 ways you can get it. You can go to takeactionteam.com. Katie puts it up there. You can go to our Facebook group, Take Action Team, and Katie publishes it there. And then also, if you want it automatically coming to your phone, if you download Podomatic and you follow the Take Action Team, it just automatically gets sent out to you each week. So with that, everyone, have an absolutely amazing week. And let me tell you, I'll be in store for a treat next week again. So thank you again, Dr. Colgan, and have a blessed week.
Okay. Thank you, Warren. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night, everyone.